Today on The Grave Talks, the Underground Paranormal Network, a conversation with Austin Maynard. In 2018, Austin Maynard moved to Bryan, Ohio, a small town brimming with untapped history, mystery, and hauntings, where he founded the Underground Paranormal Network. It's a network of seven historic and haunted locations, each holding secrets waiting to be unraveled. Through this network, he's also transforming the community. His vision goes beyond investigation because he saw an opportunity to not only shed light on these sites, but also to breathe life into the community and preserve its rich heritage. Austin's contributions to the field of paranormal exploration don't stop there. He's a true trailblazer, collaborating with equipment developers, ghost box builders, and innovative researchers to push the boundaries of our understanding. His primary focus lies in instrumental transcommunication, a field he's been researching and studying since 2017. In fact, he considers himself more of an experimentalist rather than a researcher. Today on The Grave Talks, the Underground Paranormal Network, a conversation with Austin Maynard. So, Austin, thank you so much for joining me today. Now, you are the founder of the Underground Paranormal Network. Could you kind of describe what that is and when you founded it, how it came about, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I founded the Underground Paranormal Network in 2018. But it was basically, I moved up to Bryan, Ohio in 2018. And when at that point, I had already, I was into the paranormal field for a few years. My team and I, or my partner and I, Mike Ring and Creepy Cincinnati Paraforensics, we were running the Higginsport School for a little while down in Southern Ohio. But then when I moved up to Bryan, I saw a bunch of these locations around the town, you know, like an 1869 jail, you know, Father John's microbrewery. There's a grain elevator here. There's a whole bunch of stuff. And I just was like, you know, wow, these are amazing. And my dad grew up in Bryan. My dad was born and raised in Bryan, and he's been a Williams County historian for 40 something years. And so I grew up just appreciating history in general. But then like when I started getting like into the paranormal and I started working with a lot of these locations, I really started to appreciate the architecture and the history on top of that. And so like I've realized that all of these small towns everywhere, all across the country, you know, there's just this untapped, untouched history. I mean, it's like all this stuff has been like crazy things that have happened and nobody knows about them because it's in Bryan, Ohio. Who the hell's ever heard of Bryan, Ohio, right? You know, I just saw this lack of attention being brought. And so that's kind of where the Underground Paranormal Network started, was that it's supposed to be like, quote unquote, underground locations, kind of like the underground music scene or the underground, underground meaning just like the below the mainstream. And I just felt like, you know, we could really help bring a lot of attention to the history of these no-name places, you know, and I think it can be good for a lot of things. Like it can be good for the local economy, because whenever we have people come out, you know, they got to eat at the local restaurant, stay in the local hotel or a local B&B. Like they're going to go to the local gas station and buy a bunch of snacks and stuff. Like it's tourism. There's a lot of, and plus the money that is brought in can help to preserve these haunted locations preserve these historic locations. And that's really like part of the whole goal is just like, you know, I'll be honest, we cannot bring in enough money to completely like start taking care of all these major issues with some of the buildings, you know what I mean? We can only hope to help to keep it standing. At least like that's how we volunteer all of our labor. You know, we'll run events, we'll handle, you know, private bookings and private tours and everything. We keep the place clean, and the owner will basically, we rent out the building from the owner, and he, every time we go in there, he gets paid. And he's supposed to be like, our intentions, of course, are like, you know, here's money, please put it towards the building, or please put it towards whatever. And if you need any labor, we can provide plenty of labor help for you. Even sometimes, because, you know, a lot of these people out there are skilled tradesmen. You know, they have specific knowledge, specific skills, with the right tools for certain things. Some of them are licensed electricians, you know, licensed contractors, stuff like that, you know, that are willing to volunteer. And so, like, it just seems like it makes so much sense. Like, why shouldn't we do that?
And there are small towns across the country that have these, well, not just small towns, let's just say cities, towns of any size across the country that have these old buildings that are just standing there empty, can't afford to tear them down. Nobody's taking care of them. And this is a way to actually kind of bring life back to these towns too. And these buildings make them useful again.
That's the hope, you know. That's definitely the hope.
I just recently went on vacation and we were going through Kansas City, and Kansas City's got a really cool old warehouse area, these old brick buildings that are just empty. And they're trying to revitalize them and turn them into apartments and do some things. But that takes money. And in small towns, you don't have the investors you're going to have like in a Kansas City.
No. So really, you know, when you do a lot of these, like for the buildings that we work with, for instance, like Middle Point School and the Broadwell Funeral Home, some of these places, you know, a lot of the work is just being done little bits at a time, because that's what we can afford. You know, like one thing that I know we're going to be doing at Middle Point, the Middle Point School, is like when the owner bought it several years ago, before we even started working, like there was a lot of water damage in the gymnasium. Like the floor is, you know, was soaked, and but he fixed the roof area. But like over time that wood dried, but now it's like rotted. And so as you walk in certain parts of the gym floor, you know, the floor will, it'll crack beneath you and you'll fall in. I mean, it's not like a huge fall. I mean, it's like a couple inches that you go down, but still, I mean, we need to figure out, we've been talking about doing work on that for a long time. And so now, like, our goal, the owner found a lot of big plywood boards. And so essentially we're going to be like, that's some of the stuff that we're doing for, as far as like just keeping the building at least safe. And because we're going to completely cover the gym floor with plywood, and then eventually we're going to put new gym flooring on it. Like put just complete wood, but we have to be able to completely, you know, there's a lot of beams and bows that beams of wood and floor panels that are bowed up just from the overtime and everything. So like we have to completely level the floor out. And the first step of that obviously is, you know, completely covering it with plywood, but, you know, little steps, little things, chipping out, just little things at a time can help preserve the locations. And if, you know, if the locations eventually will blow up, you know, go mainstream and just, you know, cause some of these places really do, you know, if we can start bringing in enough money, then a lot of these bigger repairs can be done. But at the, you know, we're limited, and the Underground Paranormal Network at this point is really, well, I mean, from the start, it's been trying to create something out of nothing, essentially. And I mean, we've been able to take it in good ways, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
Now, when you looked at these various locations, because how many do you do? Six or seven in there, something like that?
Yeah, seven.
Seven? So when you found these seven locations, did you go in first and do some paranormal investigating? Because, you know, you would drive by these places and you might go, that place is haunted. But you don't know until you get in it. You just get that feeling, or it just looks like a haunted place. Did you go in each of them and kind of do a little investigation first?
Well, Really, a lot of the locations were, well, I wouldn't say a lot of them. Let me think. I would say the Murphy Building, the funeral home, the Wendelin, and the Auglaize Village were all brought to my attention by my partners, Mike Ring and Eric Moore. And, you know, so like anything in the South, like the Murphy Building, the Back in Time Emporium is what it's called. The Broadwell Funeral Home and the Wendelin. Actually, Mike was called out to these locations by the owners at reporting activity. And so he went and did an investigation. And, you know, he had some crazy interactions at each of these locations. And then he would talk to the owner a little bit, kind of talk to him about what we do. And then I would get, you know, and then once I would talk to the owners, I would go out there, you know, like the Murphy Building is a good close to 5 hour drive for me. So like the ones that I found were here in Bryan were well, and Middle Point too. Middle Point School, I found just doing research. The Bryan, the 1869 jail and Father John's were local, and those ones I knew the owners. I got in touch with them, and now we have a great working relationship. But I eventually, yes, I always go in and do my own investigation before I even put it out there for people, because I don't want to, like, you know, I want to make sure, for one, this is actually active, or I'm at least getting some activity, and then there's some kind of history that can help to explain it. But, you know, and a lot of these end up just starting out as kind of like there's mysteries, right? And then the longer that we go on, the more we investigate, the more we research, we find out more and more information. You know, that's just how it goes.
What got you interested in the paranormal? I think it's interesting that your dad's kind of the town historian there, so I could see how that got you interested in history. But what got you interested in the paranormal?
Well, to be honest, I've been interested in the paranormal or the supernatural all my life. You know, when I was a kid, I was like looking, you know, I would rent books from the library about, you know, the like cryptids and aliens and all that stuff. But I never really got into the afterlife until I suffered a sudden cardiac arrest, lethal arrhythmia. When I was 18, and like they didn't really know what caused it or whatever. They still don't know what caused it, but I was in a coma for 3 days and I was in the hospital for 11 total, but I suffered from like short-term memory loss, severe concussion, frontal lobe inhibition. But I was, you know, I collapsed and was kind of without oxygen in my brain for several minutes.
Oh, wow.
And they honestly, like when they brought me to the hospital, they even brought the paperwork to my parents about, donating my organs, you know, cause they genuinely thought I was going to be in a vegetative state. And so I think that's what kind of triggered my curiosity, at least, because that's what made me want, like, I was basically gone, but then I came back because I was essentially going to be an empty vessel. You know, if that's what I was going to be in a vegetative state, then, right. You know, but when I came back, it just made me wonder, like, what in the world? And so the more I dove into it, like, the more questions I have now than anything.
I was not ready for that answer. I thought you were going to say something like, well, when I was a kid, I lived in a haunted house, or you had some experience.
Everybody's answer, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of times it is. And so I wasn't ready for that. I'm so glad you're okay now. Can't imagine parents were going through.
It's hard to even talk to them about it because they get really, really emotional. And I don't understand where they're coming from, because obviously I was the one that was unconscious, and they were there to like go through all that, you know, and that's, I can't imagine how difficult that must have been. But you know, it definitely it's a hard topic anymore. It's a hard thing to talk about because, you know, obvious for obvious reasons, but yeah, everything's been good. It's been since 2009, I think, is when it happened. June 5th, 2009 was when it happened.
Can't imagine. And something like that, really, if it doesn't change your life, something's wrong with you. If you don't have an experience like that and you just keep going about like it never happened, I mean, that is a life-changing experience. And it really would make you wonder, what's on the other side? Why was I so close? You're kind of straddling here and there for a while.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, also, it made me realize, it made me learn to appreciate life. I appreciate things a lot more than I used to, you know, and that could just be with age, but I feel like I have a different perspective on it because, you know, death can come literally at any time. I was 18 years old and it came, you know, and so who's to say it wouldn't happen later today?
Right.
I just have to do my best to be the best person that I can be, the best husband that I can be. You know, and do what I can to dive in as much as I can before I go, you know, so it's definitely an eye opener.
I can see where an experience like that, because I've talked to several people who've had near death experiences and it's really led them to a fascination with the other side and what's out there and that we don't know about. And why can't you communicate with the other side? It's, you know, it's all energy, right?
I mean that's kind of why I started like diving into instrumental trance communication. Like I dive heavy into ITC.
If you would explain ITC.
Well, instrumental trance communication, or ITC, is essentially using electronic devices to communicate with the unseen or the unknown, whatever you want to call it. But I mean, there's so many different forms of it. And ITC is such a vague umbrella term because like doing EVPs, that's a form of ITC. Mm-hmm. You're looking for manipulation of the frequencies within these devices. And so that's really like what the focus of ITC is. And that can be anything from the EVPs. It can be spirit boxes or ghost boxes. It can be using devices like the Avalis or, you know, there's such a wide range.
In your experimentation with the different devices, have you come across anything, or maybe you've developed something or kind of tweaked something in a way that works better for you?
As far as seeing, this is why, like I've kind of ruined myself, I guess, when it comes to certain things, because I'm at a point now in my research and my experimentation that I don't necessarily believe that we're talking to dead people anymore. I think there's something more along the lines of either like something from a parallel existence, like what we would call interdimensional, or even possibly. You know, I can get really deep into it. Like, I honestly believe that it's something within the dark matter, something within the particles that are not able to interact with photons, which are light particles or waves. And so like anything that we can't see is filled with some kind of matter that we don't know what it is. And so, you know what I mean? Like, so I think there's something within that. And I think that the frequencies, the radio frequencies are universal. I mean, they exist on all ends of on all ends of the universe. And so I would imagine if they live in this existence and it's just something where we can't see them or interact with them because they don't react along our electromagnetic spectrum. I mean, that doesn't mean they're not there. And there's got to be, I think that it's something within that. So I'm looking at a combination of frequencies, almost like a pin code to try to unlock or to what we got to do to bridge that gap. But I'm also looking at direct manipulation of frequencies. So I work with a guy, JW Prather of IDC Devices. He builds like devices like the Direct Link, which is used on a number of TV shows. But his devices scan the FM spectrum, and not just the 87.5 or whatever to, you know, 108.1, you know, not just that range. He's going down to like 73 megahertz all the way up to like 115 megahertz, and then adding 10 steps in between each hundredth of a megahertz, I guess. So like it would be like 73.10, 73.11, 73.12. And then he's randomly jumping around. So like no two consecutive frequencies are actually played out consecutive. And so for one, you got that element of no radio bleed through. Plus two, the way that he makes the devices is you can actually record audio every step of the way along the circuitry, along the path of the audio circuits, because what we've noticed is that there's times where everything... Okay, so here's an example. In a circuit path, an audio circuit path, for a simple ghost box, you would have your radio tuner audio that goes into a echo and reverb circuit, which then goes into the amplifier, which then goes into the speaker. So there's like four steps along the way, maybe some things in between, but it's all, those are the circuits. And it does not skip steps, right? It doesn't, audio and voltage does not like jump and skip a circuit. It has to go, it has to follow the path.
Right.
And so everything that comes out of the tuner, by the time it gets to the speaker, it should come out with echo and reverb if you have those effects turned up. So everything that comes out of that tuner should have echo and reverb. But then there are those times where we'll get voices that come through that don't have echo and reverb, even though the voices before and after had echo and reverb. But there was just that one voice or the like two or three words that would come through in between, like maybe give it like 2 seconds in between each station. There's those three words that come through that don't echo, that don't reverb. And so we're trying to figure out how the hell that happens, because it doesn't work that way.
It shouldn't happen.
No, it should not happen at all. And so what JW, it calls these direct applied voices, or DAVs. And a direct applied voice is literally like it is imprinting its voice at a certain point along the path of the circuit. Like it's actually putting itself in there, or it's manipulating the frequencies in there to create the speech that we hear. But regardless, it's not coming from the tuner. It's not coming from the radio. And so that's like, those are some of the things that we're looking at, and we can record from every step along the path in between each circuit to see where the manipulation is happening. And we're finding it happening after the amplifier board, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Because that means that between coming out of the echo reverb board and out of the amplifier, in that somewhere in there, something is putting its voice in there. Now, what in the world?
And how
exactly? And this is just some of the stuff that we're looking at.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, but that's why I dive into it so much, is because I believe that there is so much more to this than the mass belief system would tell us. You know, the REM pods and the K2s and the forward and backward SB7s and all this stuff. You know, it's those are great for, you know, and those are just kind of the generalized, everybody's got one, you know, what else is it really telling us kind of thing. And I just wasn't satisfied with that stuff. Not to say that other people, you know, they believe in them, and that's great. You know, if they have, everybody has their own reasons for being in the community or being in the field. I mean, I kind of take, maybe I take a little bit of wrongful offense to it when people call themselves like researchers or experimenters, but they're like the weekend ghost hunters.
There's researcher is different than you're going out ghost hunting.
But and to be fair, I don't even consider myself to be a real, like, an extreme researcher. I'm more of an experimentalist, trying to see what happens. But the thing is, like, with each experiment, I end up with more questions that I just continue to follow.
It's a paranormal rabbit hole, like a supernatural rabbit hole. You just keep going down and going down.
Oh, my God. It's so true, though. And, like, the more you dive into it, the less I believe in the mainstream belief system. You know what I mean? The more I think that it's just not like this. I don't believe that what I was taught when I came in is true at all anymore. I believe it's way deeper. There's so many more aspects to this that I think we're not paying attention to, or we haven't even realized yet.
You know, my sister and I just had a long conversation about the whole parallel universe thing. Like, could there be this parallel thing that sometimes you cross over into ours? And so, like, the way you're talking about it is way, like, ours was like a very basic conversation. But it's like, there's something else going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of us who are into this and listening to this podcast, there's a reason you're listening to it. So many people have had an experience hearing voices, hearing footsteps. There's something there that woke me up in the middle of the night walking down the hall. Yeah. I don't know what that was. Your mind and my mind, they're not the same. I cannot do what you're doing. But I love that you're just going with it and trying to figure it out.
I mean, I think it's because I came to the realization a while back that, like, in our lifetimes, everything that we're doing, like, even the people that are doing the deepest, most well-funded research that you could possibly have, like, I don't think that we are going to legitimately find proof, like, scientific proof of what we're looking at right now, or what we're looking for right now.
Do you even know if you were to find something, or is there something like that little holy grail that you could say that was what I was looking for? Well, or do you even know? Would you know it if you found it?
I think we would recognize. I think we would, but we don't know what exactly it is that we're, like, what kind of data we're looking for specifically. And so most of us are just looking for anomalies within certain aspects of the data, but also trying to do our best to eliminate possible false positives. And so that's why I love, you know, the random scan and, like, you know what I mean? I want to do everything that I possibly can to eliminate false positives, false, you know, outside contamination, stuff like that. I don't think that in our lifetimes we're going to be able to find it, but what we're doing now is going to inspire future generations, hopefully. You know, they'll take, you know, some of the stuff that we couldn't figure out now, and then they'll be able to look at it with better technology, better, like, simpler things that they could do 100 years from now. And look at this and be like, oh, I could do that way better. And I can also do this, and this with it. It's like, but I mean, because, like, the way that we're inspired by guys like Frank Sumption, and, you know, I'm very inspired by guys like Steve Halte and KD Stafford, JW Prather. Like, these guys are my best friends. But, like, that inspiration they learned from Frank Sumption. And but Frank Sumption, you know, he's no longer around. And look how far the ghost box community has come from when Frank Sumption initially invented the automatic sweeping radio to where we are now. Like, I can't even imagine by the time 100 years from now, as fast as technology has already advanced in the last 10 years.
Right.
Holy cow.
Now, in your experiences with going into these different locations, when something does happen to you, you know, that maybe you heard something you can't explain, a voice, footsteps, you know, the common things that a lot of us have experienced.
Right.
How do you deal with that information? Because I'm kind of like, I don't know what that was. But with you have more of a scientific brain. Can you ever just accept like that happened? I got, oh, that was weird.
Don't get me wrong. I definitely believe that. I recognize activity. I recognize, I believe in it. I like, I almost work under the assumption that they are there, you know, I hate to say that, but like, that is the case. Anybody that's actually doing like ITC work or doing anything that's like, I guess what I do at least, is under that assumption. But I think it depends on this. It depends on the situation, of course, and like how crazy or what the activity was. Like if it was like some footsteps or whatever, like I don't really look at that kind of stuff. Like I don't really, because I mean, yeah, it's hard to say either way. Like some of that stuff, like I don't think that I could take evidence if I feel like I can't take it to a skeptic and convince them of that, then I'm not going to look at it. But some of those things, if it's like, you know, a door opening or closing by itself, of course, you know, yeah, I'm going to go over there. And my first instinct is that it was not a ghost. It was not paranormal. I have to go under that assumption. And if I can, if I can't find a good, like logical explanation for it, but I've always been under the assumption to, or I work under the assumption that if there's even an unlikely scenario, a natural scenario where it unlikely, you know what I mean? Like the perfect storm of things for this to happen naturally. Like I would go with that answer before I would go with something being paranormal. But I mean, it just really, yeah, it really depends on what it is.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Underground Paranormal Network with Austin Maynard. For more information, find them on Facebook, Underground Paranormal Network. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.